From CAP Radio in Sacramento, this is Insight. I'm your host, Vicky Gonzalez. This week, we've been highlighting some of the most impactful interviews throughout the year. As the host of Insight, I looked back on more than 100 conversations, and some of the most poignant are with everyday people overcoming extraordinary hardships. One of the first story pitches I received at Insight was about a crisis happening in homes across the country, that the opioid epidemic, particularly fentanyl, is evolving. There have been more than 100,000 drug overdose deaths for a 12-month period ending in April of 2021. That's a 28% increase from the year prior. In California, there have been an estimated 10,000 drug overdose deaths, a 47% increase. Opioids are driving the overwhelming majority of overdoses. Synthetic ones, like fentanyl, are uncharted territory in experimenting with drugs, 50 to 100 times more potent than morphine. In prescription form, fentanyl is approved for treating severe pain, like cancer. But on the black market, fentanyl is now being laced unknowingly into prescription pills like Xanax or Percocet, called fentapills. And these counterfeit fentapills are easily sold on social media for as little as $5, targeting teens and young adults with deadly consequences. An anguish that Ed Ternan and his wife Mary experienced in May of 2020 with their 22-year-old son Charlie. The parents have turned their tremendous loss into awareness, creating the nonprofit Song for Charlie, warning others of the dangers of self-medicating as black market fentanyl production continues to rise. I spoke with Ed Ternan back in April and started off learning more about their son.
Charlie was our youngest child. My wife Mary and I have three children, and Charlie was 22-year-old senior in college when he died last May. Charlie died of fentanyl poisoning after taking what he thought was a Percocet, but it turned out to be a counterfeit pill, what we call a fentapill, that was made of the powerful opioid fentanyl, and it killed him. So this came as quite a shock to our families, as you can guess. You know, Charlie was a big, lovable guy, kind of the glue that held his friend group together. Had a big belly laugh, really smart, you know, going places. Now, everybody talks glowingly and lovingly about their children. And you know, like all young men, young people these days, Charlie was stressed out about his future. It was COVID. He's getting ready to graduate. What's the job market look like? And that's all very natural. But he was totally within kind of the normal range of young adult angst. So it was a shock to us when he died because there were no signs of depression or substance use disorder. Charlie was kind of a regular guy. He'd been quarantining with us in Southern California and had driven up to Northern California to spend the last 3 or 4 weeks of his spring quarter of senior year with his friends. And died 6 days after he arrived on campus. So that's kind of what happened.
And I'm so sorry about what happened. With hindsight being 2020, were there any signs that Charlie was displaying? You touched upon it a little bit, explaining the pandemic and the stresses of everyday life. If you could just elaborate on that a little bit more.
Well, sure. And I can tell you that we questioned all of Charlie's friends. And, you know, with the idea of, you know, Mary and I saying, what did we miss? Did we miss anything? And everyone reassured us that Charlie was fine, that he wasn't going through any other stress that the rest of the kids weren't undergoing. Of course, things were a little funky because of the lockdown, but he had job interviews, as a matter of fact. And one of the things we stress in our education programs that's new about this fentanyl problem is Charlie's death was not a party death. He had a job interview that afternoon on the phone. And when his fraternity brothers came and said, we're going to go out and hang out and hit some golf balls and go have some fun on a beautiful spring day, he said, I can't go. I'm going to stay home and watch video games. And that's when he took the pill, chilling out, waiting for a phone call. And he never made the 5 o'clock phone call. So we really did question everybody and say, gosh, it seems like, because that's the old narrative, right? If someone dies from a quote unquote drug overdose, they must have had a drug problem. Well, that's not what's happening. This new category of victim from these fentanyls are self-medicators, experimental drug users, first-time drug users as young as middle school. This is what we've learned in the intervening months.
What was your knowledge about fentanyl at the time, or even the ability to purchase pills on social media or even on the internet?
We did not know what fentanyl was. We had heard the term. And we also were aware that prescription pills taken recreationally was kind of on the playlist of young people these days. So that when we first heard that Charlie died and we think it's pills, we weren't 100% surprised that Charlie's not capable of anything like that. Taking, sharing prescription pills is socially acceptable today among young people. And so we knew that, but we didn't know what fentanyl was. And our initial reaction was, you know, Charlie's 6'2", 235. How many Xanax do you have to take to die from that? And luckily for us, it was the next day that law enforcement called us and said, we don't have the tox report yet, but we know what this looks like, and we strongly suspect this is fentanyl. And that's when we got online and said, what the heck is fentanyl? I describe it as the WTF moment. What's this fentanyl stuff? And we discovered this kind of information gap, and that's what we decided to address. Law enforcement and the medical community, EMTs, ER doctors, first responders, they all know that kids are dying from these fake prescription pills, but the kids don't really understand the risk yet. And so that's what we made our mission at the nonprofit we started, Song for Charlie, to warn the kids about this new risk.
The nonprofit was created to prevent this from happening to other families. How does Song for Charlie work to accomplish this?
First, we want to cut through the noise and go directly to young people. And so we're working with experts to figure out how young people communicate with each other. When I say go where they are, well, they're on social media. So our first order of business is we're producing a social media campaign for pretty broad distribution here in the next 90 days or so. And we want to amplify that through as many influencers as we can. Speak their language, we think, is short videos like TikTok and, you know, no more than a few seconds. It's not black ink on white paper these days, right? Kids relate to video. And then if we can make these things go viral and combine it with kind of a call to action, part of our message is that young people need to solve this problem themselves. Society hasn't caught up with the fake pill problem yet. They don't know how to talk about it properly. Our leaders don't understand the unique characteristics of the problem. So part of our message to young people is you need to own the solution. You didn't create this problem, but you need to know that these fake pills are everywhere, and you need to tell all your friends because you don't want this to happen to anyone in your friend group.
You also want to change how we talk about this with vocabulary and terminology. What do you mean by that?
So, just to back up globally for a second, you've got the opioid crisis. And when you talk about the opioid crisis, people kind of, their eyes glaze over a little bit. They kind of think like they've already heard all they need to hear about that. And a subset of that is the fentanyl epidemic. And that's new. And a subset of that is the fentanyl problem, these counterfeit prescription pills that are deliberately produced by the cartels to look very real. And they're sold to more trusting, younger, naive consumers who are looking online or with their friends for what they think is a safe and legal medication, but it's really made with a deadly poison. So what we try to do is break these things down. A couple of the old legacy words that get in our way. Number one is laced. So we define a fentanyl as a counterfeit prescription pill that's made of fentanyl. We do not say laced with fentanyl because that implies that a real Xanax has been adulterated with some fentanyl, and that's not what happens. These are 100% counterfeit. So, I mean, let's use the most common substance in America and an iconic brand, alcohol and Jack Daniels. Would anyone describe Jack Daniels as being laced with whiskey? No. Jack Daniels is whiskey. So it's the same with the fentanyl. Fentanyls are not laced with fentanyl. Fentanyls are fentanyl. It's a distinction that makes a difference for a lot of reasons. And the other one is, and I'll stick with the Jack Daniels analogy, deaths from a fentanyl are not overdoses, and they're certainly not accidental overdoses. They're poisonings. And that's a very important distinction. So back to the Jack Daniels. If I go to the store and say, I would like a bottle of Jack Daniels, please, and I take it home and I drink it all in one sitting and I die as a result, I have overdosed on my drug of choice accidentally. And it's fair to say that the culpability for that death is on me, the deceased, right? If I go to the store and say, I would like a bottle of Jack Daniels, please, and I take the bottle home and I take one shot, which is the recommended dose, and I fall dead as a result because it was not Jack Daniels, it was cyanide and brown food coloring, that is not an overdose. That is a poisoning. And the responsibility for that death does not fall on me, the victim. It falls on the seller of the product. That's a very important change in the narrative that our leadership, politicians, and so forth have not caught up with. And it's part of the way we're trying to reframe this problem.
As you and your wife, Mary, have learned more through this, I would imagine, you can correct me if I'm wrong, that in the beginning, did you feel that you were alone in this grief? And through the course of the months of learning more, becoming connected to other families that have suffered the same anguish and tragedy?
Yes. And it is a really disorienting experience. And we've gotten together with a number of families and we connected through Facebook groups and different ways. And we really do try to console one another and support one another in our grief. Our grief therapist talked to us about the idea that the loss of a child is at the top of the grief hierarchy for good reason. The sudden loss of a child is different than maybe a gradual loss of a child to illness. Both are tragic, but the sudden loss of a child has an element of PTSD to it that parents have to deal with, and siblings as well, right? Family members. The blast zone from something like this is very wide. And then when your child dies suddenly and unexpectedly from a cause that you had never heard of before, that just piles on. A kid dying from fentanyl poisoning after taking what they thought was a legitimate pill, that was not on our radar screen. And so it's a very unique kind of club that we're in, and we try to pull together as much as we can.
There's going to be a lot of people listening to this, and they're learning this for the first time, or they're getting a deeper understanding of this. What advice do you have to these individuals, these listeners, particularly parents, signs that they can look out for?
Yes. I think what I would want parents to know is that the drug landscape has completely changed. And when we were growing up, it was described as a path that you wanted to make sure you didn't get off on the wrong path, because if you did, it could lead to substance dependency, addiction, and possibly eventually down the road someday, accidental overdose. But the drug landscape today is more like a minefield than a path, in that your next step, any next step for these kids could be fatal, because fentanyl is the perfect mousetrap for drug trafficking organizations. It's cheap and it's easy to smuggle, and they are just printing money by selling these pills. And they understand that, you know, the think of it this way, young people turning 21 this year were born in the turn of the century. And they grew up with not just the internet and iPhones in their hands, but also with Adderall and Ritalin and Xanax in grammar school. So pills are, they're assumed to be safe, and they've been normalized among this age group. What they need to know is there's an imminent danger, even if you're just thinking about experimenting, from these fake pills. And unfortunately, fentanyl is showing up in party drugs as well, like ecstasy and Molly and cocaine. So it's a whole different landscape than what my wife, Mary, and I had to deal with when we were coming up, you know, in the 70s and 80s. Synthetics have changed the game. So but I also think, sorry for the long answer, but we also have to acknowledge that children today or our young people, they're walking around with a pretty high base level of anxiety because of social media and life's pressures. And then you put COVID on top of that. So we like to say that your stress is real, but these pills are fake. And we want to offer them real solutions. You just have to assume that they're all fake. And if they're fake, a good percentage of them are deadly.
We started with Charlie, and I would like to end with your son. How do you reflect on the past 10 months approaching the anniversary of Charlie's death?
We wouldn't wish it on anyone. It's a very difficult journey. Sometimes we wonder whether we're doing the right thing, speaking out. Is this what Charlie would want us to do? But at the same time, we feel kind of guided to do so. And we think Charlie would want us to do it. We have had doors open to us in this effort that almost seem like cosmically, you know, directed. And Mary and I talked at the very beginning that we weren't going to go crashing down any doors. We were just going to knock on doors, and we would keep knocking until somebody told us to stop, until somebody slammed a door in our face and said, "You're wasting your time." And that has not happened yet. And in fact, the opposite has happened. The doors that have opened at the highest levels and the interest and support that we've gotten has been pretty incredible. And some of the parents that we have met on this journey, they don't have the resources that we do. So we say to ourselves, you know, why not us, right? And the other reason is because we kind of think, we hope that it's a solvable problem. We think about the roofie issue and that the mindset has been changed among young women just by going viral, that there's creepy guys out there who will drop something in your drink if you're not looking. And that's what we kind of use as our inspiration, is that we don't have to change any laws necessarily, it'll take longer for laws to catch up and for society to catch up. But our goal is that anyone who's in eighth grade now starts college or enters college age 5 years from now, and their mindset is, none of my friends take random pills. Are you kidding me? Nobody does that. It's like nobody leaves their drink alone in a bar anymore, right? That's what we want to accomplish. And if we think we go straight to the kids, we think we can do that. And, you know, we think Charlie would be happy with that result.
That was Ed Ternan. He and his wife, Mary, started the nonprofit Song for Charlie after losing their 22-year-old son in May of 2020 to fentanyl poisoning. Our conversation aired in April. Up next, continuing with extraordinary hardships, my conversation with a Sacramento Afghan family on their harrowing escape from Afghanistan following months of hiding in the aftermath of the U.S. withdrawal. You're listening to Insight here on your NPR station, CAP Radio. I'm Vicki Gonzalez.
Hi there. If you're enjoying Insight, we think you'll love our podcast, Blue Dot, with your host, that's me, Dave Shlohm. Every week, we take a deep dive into science and nature, from the search for life beyond our pale blue dot in the vastness of space to the ecosystems we all depend on. You never know what you'll hear, from the physics of Leonardo da Vinci to communications with humpback whales. Check out Blue Dot wherever you get your podcasts.
At a time when information continues to come at us faster and faster, sometimes you need to hit pause and rewind. NPR's Throughline takes you back in time to the source of the news stories filling your feed. Find NPR's Throughline wherever you get your podcasts.
You're listening to Insight here on CAP Radio. I'm your host, Vicky Gonzalez. An important responsibility of Insight is to share how historic moments impact people, our neighbors. Among the most historic and controversial of 2021, the U.S. withdrawal from Afghanistan and the abrupt takeover of the Taliban. Thousands desperately tried to flee the country in the immediate aftermath. 13 U.S. service members and at least 170 Afghans died during bombings at Hamid Karzai International Airport. The images of people hanging onto airplanes, handing over children to the U.S. military, will be cemented in history. Sacramento is home to one of the largest Afghan refugee populations in the country, and we would learn dozens of students and their families were stuck in Afghanistan, unable to return home. But in the weeks following the deadly chaos, we witnessed extraordinary, far from guaranteed wins. One involves an elementary school principal really going above and beyond for one Sacramento Afghan family. Huma and Ramatullah spent 3 months in hiding with their children, Raihan, Faizan, and Pakiza, who were students at Ethel I. Baker Elementary in Sacramento City Unified. We regularly had Principal Nate McGill on Insight, updating the family's uncertain, dangerous journey. A wonderful moment took place last month. The family safely arrived in Sacramento, with Principal McGill welcoming them at the airport. I spoke with Huma, Ramatullah, and Principal Nate McGill the week their children returned to class. Here's their story.
How did it feel touching down in Sacramento at the airport and walking out and seeing the people that have been thinking about you every moment during this time?
My kids were like a bird out of prison, you know. They were so happy. They hugged their principal and they thanked them and they thanked their teachers.
So it was the best moment in my life that when they came in on Monday to the school and the way they shows their excitement in the school, it was unforgettable day for me. So I'm feeling really good to get back to the home and get back kids to the school.
I told them it is humanity, you know. They're saving lives here and some people are all taking life there.
How do you reflect on the last couple months and just really fighting to get your family back here?
These 3 months, we struggle a lot. We depress a lot in our country. Every day a new incident, every day a new story, every day a new violations. So it was a very it was very effect on our brain and on my kids. The way they're asking on this age, it was like unacceptable for me that in this age they are asking me such a questions. So I was really worried for them and especially to my husband. These 3 months is really, really too hard and horrible.
When you were in Afghanistan, were you and your family essentially in hiding? How did you stay under the radar until you were able to leave safely?
So we really were afraid, and you know, we tried to keep them and at home, my kids, and the kids also afraid, and it was really heartbreaking for us, hiding myself at home. It's like a human being is hiding himself from another human being. It's frustrating.
How did you navigate those conversations with your children that are so young, dealing with something so grave that even any adult would find incredibly challenging?
In one home, we were living more than 30 people. So all of them were following social medias and the incidents, the securities. So if one person raised the issues, everyone was around. So kids were listening, and later on they were asking, oh mom, is this Taliban are really dangerous? Is they are killing the people who came from the US? Is they will kill us as well? So this kind of question, it was really hard to me to answer them, but I try a lot to keep calm.
Yeah, I was comforting them that I can beat anybody if come here to take you from us, so I can beat them. They were smiling, oh, my dad is smart, my dad is strong, he can protect us. So it was the way that we were comforting them.
Definitely, we were really depressed. Sometimes we got panic attacks. So for the treatment also is a big issue, how we can go out, because in front of the house a few checkpoints of the Taliban, because next to the houses there was Indian consulate, Iranian consulate. So definitely if you go in and go out too much, definitely they are asking, they are stopping, what are these people are doing, what is their like job. So many times when we got panic attacks, so we call the doctor and we bring them inside the home, and then we do the treatment. So most of the time we get depressed. So thanks to my kids' teacher, most of the time they send their stories, their incredible family stories. So when he is explaining or when I was reading it, so especially the message of the principal, so he was regularly sending the message to the kids. So a little bit we get relaxed and we were encouraging. So on that way we just complete this 3 months.
Did you and your family have a conversation about the possibility that you wouldn't be able to come back here and that how you would continue to live your lives in Afghanistan?
I was go from there as a very happy moment that to see my family, especially my mother. She is a heart patient, so she was really sick. So I just visit her to see her, and my in-law family, my father-in-law and mother-in-law, they are also. So I was just very excited to see them. We were planning to be back on 26 August, but when we he came and we celebrated the Eid, and the soon after the Eid on 15 August, everything is changed, which is unacceptable for me. I didn't thought that maybe these people can come and they take the power like that much easily. So that was the big concern to me, that how it's possible. And then we on 31st August, when the US force lifted Afghanistan, we totally lost the hope. We said, oh, now we cannot go out safely. So then starting traveling and hiding.
Wow. You mentioned your mother is a heart patient. How is she doing?
She's really suffering. She's the one who is really suffering for me. My father-in-law is paralyzed. He is the one who is most suffering from everybody. My mother-in-law is the same. So we have a few families. My mother, she's heart patient, diabetes. So as she heard about us that we are when in danger, then the BP is automatically is to be high. So controlling of her is also a big deal for us. So as we arrive here, she was really happy.
And although you're having a weight of relief, I mean, a big chunk of your hearts are still in Afghanistan with your families and loved ones.
Yes. The day we arrived here, we were really excited. But on another hand, we were worried for them as well.
When hearing about when the Taliban now taking control of Afghanistan, a huge overarching concern is the future of girls, of women in that country. You have a daughter. When you were in Afghanistan, what level of concern did you have?
The day they came, I just totally stopped my kids to go outside. So in these 3 months, my kids didn't see outside. They were inside of the home. I didn't leave them to go away from my eyes, so I was following them everywhere.
You know, your story is so important because it's not just one story. You know, there are thousands of families that are fighting for the same thing, and it's really important to continue having these conversations. What more do you want people to know?
It is this destroy the 20 years of hard work of everybody. Like we were serving from 10, 12 days. It is destroyed because I was working for the empowerment of women. It was newly started women for the higher education, for the to know of their rights and their the laws. So suddenly everything is destroyed. They are playing with the futures of everybody, because if a girl wears jeans, they are killing them. The day on 4th November, they killed four social activist women. So for right in the moment, it's very easy to kill someone there. For them, it's very easy. It's not acceptable.
I don't even have words for that. That's just so unfortunate and awful when you think about what is happening in Afghanistan, and especially when talking to the both of you that speak multiple languages, you're highly educated, and that isn't possible to move forward with this new regime.
I work for human rights in Afghanistan, and my wife's also worked in several youth projects in Afghanistan. So she has a bachelor degree, and I was doing my master degree. We both can speak 4 or 5 languages.
I try a lot to here to be had a professional a job, but since last this 3-4 years, I couldn't find even a normal job for myself. That was a little bit sad moment for me, because my husband already explained you, because when I saw him, like before years, he was doing a cashier job. So I feel sad that he was a student of MA, master, bachelor degree. He was doing in my country. He was working like recovering the refugees as an officer. And now he is doing this cashier's job. And me, I become as a housewife because I have my own career. So I want to build my career to be as a professional lady. So let's hope for the best. I heard some positive news that the school district already approved a vacancy and a positions. So definitely I will try my best. I will apply, and I hope we get it. One of us maybe get it, inshallah. So
it's so wonderful having you here and your family safe in Sacramento. Your children are just so happy to be here back in school. Are you concerned about them in the months to come, just with healing and anything that they endured, the trauma and the fear that they went through? Or are they pretty resilient and they're kind of already getting back to being what they should be, normal, healthy, happy children?
We are trying because I know these 3 months, it's affect a lot their brains. So I know it will take time to come back and catch up everything and to start a normal life. So definitely we will work with them. The school is already doing their hard work, and they are also already requested to the teachers, if possible, once a week or twice a week, some 1 hour extra classes or two, because they were far away from 3 months to the schools. So maybe they will recover soon.
As a school principal of a little over 600 students, there's not a lot of downtime. So have you even given yourself some time to pause and reflect on the past 3 months?
I've had some downtime, and the emotions that I feel are pretty intense about it. Just kind of the amount of energy we all put into each other, the family and I, to get this thing done was really amazing. I think that's what I reflect on, that kind of the amount of, like I said, amount of energy or care or time or effort that these two and our team put into making this happen is kind of incredible, what it took to get 5 folks from Afghanistan back to the United States.
How did it feel to touch down here and see Nate and all the other people that were working so hard to get you back and thinking of your family during this time?
During the hard time, when we lost our hopes, their emails, their the way they are working for us to take us safely out, there, that is very incorrigible and unforgettable. So it was really an excited moment when we arrived here, when we saw the kids principals. He really hard worked for us a lot, because the many, many nights he was awake, because there is difference of day and night here and there. So most of the time when we feel really depressed, we text him, we disturb him in after without waiting of a minute, we receive the replay. So since when we came here, we just already talk with each other. That is unforgettable hard works and their efforts for us. So that is, we really thankful of them.
How are their children doing, your students? They're all students here.
Now they're here and all the kids are out at recess. They're back in classes. So my hope is that it feels very normal to them. They're doing well, but at the same time, we know that just as both parents expressed, there is an effect on their wellness, on their mental health, to be able to endure what they endured. That's not normal. And for such a long period, our big concern is that they have, you know, mental health needs that we have to address, and that's our responsibility.
What resources do you have as educators to help them through this?
So luckily, the focus of our school outside of the academics is serving the mental health needs of the community, where our community is, you know, disproportionately affected by trauma in its various forms. And so we know that the right sort of counseling, support, mentoring, mental health resources as a basis of our school. So that happens every single day. So we have a full-time therapist, we have a social worker, we have a mental health coordinator on top of myself and my assistant principal. And then we ask that all teachers bring that idea of wellness into the classroom. And so we know that kids can't activate their thinking and learning brain unless they feel safe, that they're in a good mental health state. And so that's kind of what we do.
You went above and beyond as a principal of an elementary school, and the relationship that you developed with this family was very personal and intimate, and sharing stories from such an uncertain and terrifying ordeal that they went through. How did all of this shape you as a person?
I think I'm just inspired by what they did for their kids and for their family more than anything. Like, you know, we see stories of resilience every single day. This just has to be one of the most compelling that I've ever heard. In terms of how it shaped me, maybe time will tell on that, but I do think it brings to light the immigrant story for the United States, and how important it is that we listen to how folks have gotten here and the countries that at times they leave behind. Going back to the diversity question, we have so many immigrant stories here. And actually, when I shared with the staff last week that they were touching down, many of my staff members either emailed back or came up to me and said, you know, by the way, I came here when I was 7. I came here when I was 10 with my whole extended family. And I do think we lose sight of that because we don't take the time to pay attention to everybody's story. And they're going to have a really good story, and so are their kids.
They did a lot for us, you know. It was mission impossible if they were not here. So these people helped a lot and saved some lives, you know, and got some kids back to school. And that is the big message, and that is a big message of humanity for other people, for other countries, that it is the difference between these people and our new government. Those are stopping kids from going to school, and these are bringing their students from 7,000 miles back to their school. So it's a big difference. So I thank God that we are back to our home here, and we feel safe.
That is Huma and Ramatullah, the parents of Ethel I. Baker Elementary students Raihan, Faizan, and Fakiza, as well as Principal Nate McGill. The family safely returned home after 3 months of hiding in Afghanistan following the U.S. withdrawal. Our conversation aired last month. Still ahead, the pandemic may have dismantled our definition of normal, but artists, thank goodness, kept on creating. Cap Radio leaves you with the top modern music picks of 2021. You're listening to Insight here on Cap Radio. I'm your host, Vicky Gonzalez. We're back in just a moment.
Hi there. If you're enjoying Insight, we think you'll love our podcast, Blue Dot, with your host, that's me, Dave Shlohm. Every week, we take a deep dive into science and nature, from the search for life beyond our pale blue dot in the vastness of space to the ecosystems we all depend on. You never know what you'll hear, from the physics of Leonardo da Vinci to communications with humpback whales. Check out Blue Dot wherever you get your podcasts.
At a time when information continues to come at us faster and faster, sometimes you need to hit pause and rewind. NPR's Throughline takes you back in time to the source of the news stories filling your feed. Find NPR's Throughline wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to Insight on Cap Radio. I'm your host, Vicky Gonzalez. Music, no matter the genre, can help us better understand our feelings. And with the perfect playlist, we have a great soundtrack for our days, whether they're good, bad, or in between. It's been almost 2 years since the start of the pandemic, and with that, lots of feelings. And while many things have changed, music, while it may have slowed down, it did not. As we wrap up our last show of the year, we are finally welcoming back our modern music director. He's been busy with his other duties as the station's assistant program director. Yes, he wears multiple hats, so it's great to welcome him back to Insight. Nick Bruner, thanks for joining us again.
Well, Vicky, thanks for having me. I gotta say, by the way, those meh in between playlists, those are the hardest ones to put together.
Yeah.
Angry, sad, yeah, you know exactly where you're going. The one where it's just kind of middle of the road, that's a trick to that.
Yeah, there is a trick to that. Well, on that note, as the host of Hey Listen, how do you sum up music of the year of 2021?
well, geez, it's sort of a coup to be able to do this. It's a lot of one-on-one connection with the people who make it and the people who are promoting it. So in the case of this list, it's been great because I've got a chance to meet almost everybody on this list throughout the year and the releases they put together. Really, it's just whatever I think kind of fits the scope of the show, which is generally bright, upbeat, not always, but kind of like a good, robust selection of music that should be on the radio, but isn't. How's that for a dodge?
Yeah, that's a good dodge. And, you know, that's completely understandable, given that you've probably listened to tens of thousands of songs this year, and you actually whittled it down to five of your favorite songs. How was that process? Pretty difficult?
Yeah, far from complete, by the way. This is by no means a comprehensive list of what's excellent music around the Sacramento region. Like, we're going to miss Igweaka, who I wrote about for NPR earlier this year, Harris Rudman, let alone bands like La Luz, who have members all across the country, but their lead lives in Northern California, so I kind of claim them. Their new album is amazing. Not on this particular list, though. So,
all right, well, let's get into the first of your picks. It is by DeFemme. What can you tell us about the band and the song Boxer 2?
Well, DeFemme is a great group that's just getting started. They are born of the pandemic. Four friends who have made music in other bands, Screecher, G Green, Tycho. There are it's just a wealth of talent in this group. And they use their other artistic talents to go along with the music portion of this, too. We got a chance to interview DeFemme a couple of weeks back. That's up on Cap Radio Music right now. Check that out if you'd like to know the full story or the story up to now about the group. But it's post-punk, and it's kind of warm synthesizer, angry, artistic, expressive music.
This has me think, I'm so happy live music is back. They would be awesome in concert.
They made their onstage debut at the Red Museum back in September, and they just opened for White Denim earlier, just last weekend, in fact. So, yeah, and it's still really early in their career, and I cannot wait to watch them perform live more as fingers crossed, we continue to open up.
That's great. Well, the next song, a collaboration between Bossy Vibe and Camilla Covington, who we have heard here on Insight. What can you tell us about this song? Because it was recently released, right?
It was released just the week that we're talking. The track is so cute. These two are a couple, and they both make excellent music, some of my favorites of this year by themselves. So they just released a collaboration. Bossy Vibe put out this track on the 14th. Of December, and it's called Yo Mama, and it's a wonderful little story. When we rendezvous, yo mama don't want me over, and it's quite cool with me. Yo mama don't want me over, I know that she likes me. Fine.
You gotta be skinny for Twitter to love you. Gotta be a baddie for Twitter to love you. Side on busted for Twitter to love you. Lashes fluttering for Twitter to love you. Tatted up, iced out, flex when it's nice out. None of that ish even matters now. Cause it's a pandemic, man. And next thing you know, even my mama won't let you over. You don't ask much of me. And you don't do a whole lot of commentating like these other boys. Let's just rendezvous and get my car door windows condensating. Making all the noise that we want. You text me, come as you are. I pack a book and some weed. Got my edges fuzzy and my piss and musty, but you still put it down for me.
I'm getting like a throwback R&B vibe to this.
Oh, that's right where Bassy Vibe lives. I mean, that's exactly where I think his sound really shines the absolute most. And to hear Camila come on and put the little breakdown in the middle there, it was just so much fun. And the video is very, very cute. I strongly recommend it.
Keeping with mellow vibes, we have Long Boy up next. Why did you pick Calatoga?
Well, as a matter of fact, I didn't. I didn't necessarily pick the band myself. Speaking of Camila, when we asked her to write about her favorite Tiny Desk entrance this year, and Long Boy was one of them. That's how I found out about the band. And I went and I picked up a recent release of theirs, and this was on it. And it just struck me because I really love just the kind of beachy vibe that this track puts out. Camila writes that the timidness of Sacramento band Long Boy only enhances their sweet sound and melancholy storytelling. And that really resonates with me. Yeah, this track is called Calatoga. Let's go.
I'm envisioning driving down Highway 1. It has a very California feel to it for me.
Well, it's funny you should mention that, given the title of the album is Nostalgia Diner.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Good title and good feel. Up next, Bad Barnacles. This is the fourth of your selection. Why'd you choose it?
What I really like about the Bad Barnacles is their raspy analog sound. So when you listen to their tracks, like it sounds like you dug their record out of a chest from a sunken ghost ship. And this is from...
That is an awesome description. I'm just going to give you kudos for that one.
Well, thank you. Thank you. It took me a second. This one comes from their record Holy Water, which came out earlier this year. It's called Strong River. And let's have a listen.
I never thought I would say this. It's like a maritage with a country vibe and some psychedelicness to it.
Yeah, I think that's a really good comparison. It's got a wonderful twangy ramble about it that I just love, and it pervades the entire record.
Finally, Sparks Across Darkness. That is a great name. What can you tell us about the next song, Crazy?
This was a collaboration between Sparks Across Darkness and Tip Vicious that came out earlier this year. Crazy really grabbed a hold of me. Anthony Giovanni, the voice behind Sparks Across Darkness, he sent me this over Instagram. We've been talking a lot ever since. And I've been playing it a lot on the show. It's been one of my favorites.
Tippy and Sad Dad back again. Hide your fans, super twin rapping friends, but both of us are masculine. I'm the foul-mouthed rascal, he's the calm and brainy one. Our powers combine to form this bullet in your cranium. I'm crazy, not even my mom could sway me. On a path of shattered pavement, I amass a little payment. In the midst of quiet crickets, I'm too freaking dumb to listen. So I keep swinging in the dark while I got the arms to miss them. Any of you crap sacks, disc sparks, I'm a half match. Gonna need a hazmat to protect y'all from the rads that nuclear reaction, bleeding, fallout on career paths. A bunch of peers that make music for rears. I cover my ears. At any rate, you know my pen is sharp on any take. I'm taking pounds for penny's sake and making songs you can't equate. My tooth is aching from the pain of all the sweet shit that I sling. The wild bars I haven't tamed. I guess I'm loco in the brain. My mama says I'm lazy and my father couldn't save me. Now my dog thinking I'm crazy. I don't care, you're gonna pay me. And my mama says I'm lazy and my father couldn't save me. Now my dog thinking I'm crazy. I don't care, you're gonna pay me. My mama says I'm
all right, you get the gold star. Everyone's bobbing their heads in there. That is a strong finish, Nick.
I had nothing to do with it. Congratulations, Sparks Across Darkness. Excellent production on that piece. It just keeps the whole thing flowing so, so well. It's just a lot of fun. It was a single that was released earlier this year. In November, Sparks Across Darkness released the Wayward EP. So if you want more, you can find all that stuff at your favorite digital music or physical music location.
Before we let you go, any artists you're excited about for 2022?
Oh, gosh, I mean, there's so many. What excites me every year about this job is what I don't know. So it's all the groups that are going to be coming that I have no idea about yet. It's this simple act of discovering all of the great new stuff is just in the wings. You can kind of feel it crackling on the edges. But if I had to pick, I'm really excited about the full-length album that DeFemme is planning on releasing in 2022.
Cap Radio's modern music director, Nick Bruner. You have a lot of fun, Nick.
Well, I try.
A little jealous. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks a lot, Vicky.
That is it for Insight today. You can learn more about our guests at capradio.org/insight. You can also subscribe to the Insight podcast. Thank you to producers Cynthia Lopez and Nick Dobis, with managing editor Aram Sarkissian. Special thanks to rock star Pauline Bartolone. Our digital team is Chris Hagen, Emily Zentner, Helga Salinas, and Megan Minata. Cap Radio's technical director is Mark Jones, and our engineers are Antonio Munez, Chris Feltz, and Steven Starbuck. Joe Barr is Cap Radio's chief content officer. And I'm Vicky Gonzalez. Thanks for joining us. We'll catch you back here in 2022. In the meantime, here's DeFemme's Young One.
At a time when information continues to come at us faster and faster, sometimes you need to hit pause and rewind. NPR's Throughline takes you back in time to the source of the news stories filling your feed. Find NPR's Throughline wherever you get your podcasts.